What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 53 of The Overview. I'm Chanman V, and joining us today, or joining me today, of course, is Ben Fishsticks and Jason Kaplan. What's up, guys?
Yo, yo. What's up, Chris?
Not too much,
What's
man.
Up, Jason? God, I hate people who just learn how to do their job at the market. I see people in bronze be able to do this job better. Literally every item. Bell pepper. Oh, sorry. What's the number on this one? Oh, okay. Avocado. What's this? Suck it. So, all right, I'm here.
So we've been obviously waiting on this guy who's been apparently a piggy at the market. But I'm glad we're able to finally start the show.
Already. We just started the show. That's like the worst show ever.
All right. Well,
you know, we've made jabs at German efficiency before on the show. Biting you in the ass there, Jason. Apparently not.
It doesn't exist.
It's definitely not rubbing off on you, that's for sure.
Oh, man.
Hey.
All right, but anyways, Overwatch-wise, we've got some good things to talk about. World Cup being the big thing that was announced this week. Some possible events or something going on April 11th, which we'll theorize about in a second. A little bit of news on a new hero, as well as some news regarding some teams, some players, and then, of course, events. We've got a new event that was announced this week, Rivalcade, as well as a lot of action going on in the Overwatch Pit Championship. And then lastly, a few questions from a lot of the fans that have emailed them in, and you can email your questions at theoverview@chainmanv.tv. So anyways, let's start off with talking about a possible new event or something, like a animated short, something going on April 11th. I think recently we saw something posted on the Facebook page, which let me show you real quick. We saw this video posted on the Facebook page.
And, very cryptic.
Yeah, as always, right? So what do you guys think? What do you think this is?
No idea. So we talked about this a little bit before the show started. It seems like Blizzard has been sticking to a very general cadence of release a new hero, release a new map, release in-game content like skins. So these things typically don't happen at the same time. They're usually spread apart. So we got Oasis, we got Orisa. I think we're due for a new content drop in the form of skins and sprays and stuff like that. So that would be my guess, I guess. But also, you talked about the fact that this is very much related to King's Row here. So who knows? Maybe it could be like some kind of physical in-person event in London. That wouldn't surprise me at all. It could be some addition to the map. Like maybe we're going to get a new lore point by just something happening within the map. Maybe a new, maybe we'll get a new cinematic and it'll relate to King's Row. Could be any of these things. We have no idea.
I think it's a new PvE event. Like we saw Junkenstein's Revenge. I think it's going to be something like that. Because it's like saying the Omics, you have to like register and like watch the Omics go rogue and sort of fight. And you have to like do something involving that. Like I guess if you're on the Omics side or you're maybe on the human side to do something. I don't know. I think it's like a new game mode maybe for like fun. Or it's a PvE event.
Okay. That'd
be good too. Everyone loves the PvEs. So far,
I mean, if it's going to be PvE, I would hope that skins and stuff are accompanying it, given that you're going to have a big release like that. One thing that they've typically done with events is it accompanies some type of real life event, right? Whether it's Olympic Games or Halloween, holiday, Christmas, or even Chinese New Year, or Lunar New Year. Right now, I don't know of any event that's happening in April. Do you guys know anything internationally or on April 11th?
The start of spring? I don't know.
Yeah, so if it is an event, maybe it's the first Overwatch unique event. You know, has nothing to do with the real world. That could be kind of cool, at least introduce that. They wouldn't be pressured, at least, to line up things with real-life celebrations or holidays, anything like that. But, yeah, I'm hoping it's a PvE type of thing. We've already had a King's Row animation, you know, with the Widowmaker one. So I don't know if they would choose that, given that they have so many other things that they could choose from. They would choose that again. Hopefully it is some type of PvE, but we'll see. I'm sure they're going to drop some more stuff. It looks like there's some cryptic barcode-ish stuff that happens on the...
Oh, really?
The right? You see that? Look on the right. Look on the right. Look, you see that thing?
Not this again.
Yeah, see? That is not text. I mean, that's obviously barcode. you know, barcode-ish type of things. So,
oh man, we've got a Griffin from the Blizzard team is in chat, just giving us a thinking emoji. So,
oh really? Okay,
stirred things up. Okay. Thanks, Griffin.
I'm sure we'll know by the end of the day. At least a lot of people will start decrypting that aspect of it, and then we'll probably find out some more things. Other than that, underneath here, I can't really tell what this is right here. Can you guys tell right here?
I don't know.
I can't really tell.
Well, it looks like the control. It looks like a control panel type thing.
It is, but it's like it looks like train tracks maybe there, something like that. I'm trying to see if we can see anything else in these pictures, but we'll just leave it.
It's supposed to coincide with like apparently a Heroes of the Storm like big update, right? So I was reading into that, and apparently there's like a big Heroes of the Storm update at the same time, and like Genji's the next hero in Heroes of the Storm, so maybe there's like some sort of crossover or something like that.
Okay, well, Genji doesn't really have much to do with King's Row.
Well, I mean, just think about this way, though. The fact that now another game has to deal with how annoying of a hero Genji is. Not only us now in Overwatch, Heroes of the Storm has to deal with it.
Genji's totally balanced and a very well-designed hero. I don't know what you're talking about.
We definitely have a Genji player here. That's for sure. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm sure in the subreddit, go check out r/Overwatch for probably the latest updates on what the latest theories or theory crafting for what this is going to be. If not, just wait a week and then we'll know for sure. We'll basically wait a week right before the show starts, because it seems to always be released right before the show or right as we're doing the show. Definitely check that out next week. I think another bit of news is that Jeff Kaplan did an interview recently. Let me show it to you guys. And he talked about the next hero, and that the next hero is actually far along in development, and that they're currently working on the artwork and heavily playtesting it. So we might be seeing a new hero by summer, maybe early summer. That'd be pretty exciting, given that, you know, Risa literally just got dropped, and potentially getting four heroes in a year, that'd be pretty sweet. What do you guys think?
I mean, I'd hope for more than four heroes in a year, to be honest.
Really? Okay.
Like, League of Legends used to be one every 2 weeks, and now it's like one every couple months, but they still release like five or six a year. I mean, considering Overwatch is in such an early state, more heroes is something that's like heavily needed. But I mean, this isn't like really news that the new exterior is far in development. Like, they have multiple heroes being worked on at the same time, and they always have one like getting ready to go for the next one once one's released. So it's not really a big surprise, but you're probably not going to see the next hero for a while, since Orisa still hasn't really been balanced too well, or at least to the way to see her played competitively often.
Well, I mean, to your point, I think they're happening in parallel. So balancing Orisa is one thing, and, you know, having whatever design section of the design group work on the next character is this different thing. But it's pretty clear in this interview that they've already decided who and what it is. And that's good. You know, that's definitely like in a state where you're coming into the launch phase of it. And that's I think that's pretty exciting to see. I don't expect more than four. Like, I would have been ecstatic to see more than four, but given just the rate that we've seen, and just how they've been very cautious about balancing, I just didn't see that many coming out.
It's been every 3 months so far, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You got Ana, Sombra, Orisa.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we did have Mei, Genji, D.Va released at the same time, like in the close. Was that at the end of closed beta, basically? Like, those three heroes were released. So
the BlizzCon.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of hope there's more heroes, because I'm tired of seeing like the same comps run every time. I don't know. Like, there's so many untapped, I think I said this last week, there's so many untapped potential skills to be made and put into the game, into a new hero that can change the game pretty diversely. Like, I want to get to the point where, okay, you see dive comp. All right, we need to run this specific comp to counter dive comp. Then they'll run a different comp to counter your comp. And you're just always just changing and switching. And the players who really excel are the players who get those ultimates online in time, or make certain heroes work in a comp against like a counter. I don't know. Like, I want to see more strategic depth into the game, and that requires more heroes and a little bit more tweaking.
No one's going to argue against more heroes. But, Jason, I will say, you're like, I don't want to see the same comps all the time, but it's a different same comp, if you don't mind
me. That's right.
Make any sense at all.
No, there's a strong... Yeah, I know.
We've got like this... we're going to talk plenty more about this, believe me, when we talk about some of the events going on this week. But right now, it's like Winston, Tracer, Pharah, Mercy. Like, this dive comp is so dominant, but you go back three weeks, and we weren't seeing this. So, yes, you're right. The meta does seem to always be in a place where, like, most people are choosing, like, there's really high pick rates for certain heroes, but it changes every 3 weeks, so.
Well, let me just, like, rephrase then. Like, I would love to see not one comp be better on almost every single map at every single point than every other comp. Like, I would like to see a little bit more diversity in compositions when it comes, a little bit more balance in terms of compositions. Obviously, you're going to have one comp that's stronger at the time, but eventually the way I would like to see it get to is you have, you know, dive comp is really good on first point Eichenwald, and then you need to switch to like a little bit more of a tank heavy comp into the second phase or something like that, and not be able to see teams run dive comp for an entire map. I don't know, I just want a little bit more balance in composition, so that makes sense. I always understand that there would be one comp that's generally better though, but just,
we,
I don't know.
We see it from time to time. It's not like we don't see this kind of switching comp. It's just we don't see it to a level where you're switching five, you know, heroes or six heroes. We see it, you know, maybe they switch two heroes, right? And a lot of times they switch one, which is just to counter something, you know, counter Tracer. Like they're just getting owned by Tracer. Somebody finally plays McCree or something like that, you know, just to mitigate it to some degree. But yeah, for the most part, we don't see that ever changing type of countering mid game, you know, mid series that eventually Overwatch will be. And that probably plays a lot into doing the hero pool, but I also think it still has to do with the players just not being familiar enough with enough characters too. I don't think we're to that point that we can say that we've maxed out the heroes because the players are limited right now.
That's a good point, actually. Like we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I know Ben, you could definitely chime in about it. Like if there is a need for one person to know like seven different heroes, it becomes harder to master each of those heroes to the level you need to play it at necessarily. Like look at Shadowburn. If he had to play like eight different heroes in phase, then his Genji probably wouldn't be as good as it is.
Yeah. And I guess one thing to ask too, to both, or at least I want to ask with you guys is when we're talking about esports and we're talking about, you know, seeing spectacular play and even just storylines and commentary, do you want to see somebody who specializes in a character and you can say he's best in the world? And, you know, I think something analogous to that would be, you know, Taimu Widows and, you know, even Miro Winston's at times and Kaiser Reinhardt's. You know, do we want to see that type of thing? Or, I mean, is that easier to talk about than talking about somebody that's just constantly switching like a flower or somebody along the lines of that?
You know, originally I wouldn't have said so, but, you know, just the way that you framed it, you're totally right that it's Miro's Winston that people talk about. It's Haksal's Genji. It's Taimu's McCree and Widowmaker. You know, it's so far, it does seem like people get really well known when they specialize, but I don't think it's going to hurt the storylines like super long term. I think that's just kind of the game's so young that people only have gotten to that level at a certain number of heroes at this point. So, yeah.
I mean, I personally see like two different things there where you have the infamous player Taimu on his McCree or Widowmaker, and then you have Tevik who can play basically anything to like the highest level, not necessarily like transcend the highest level to be like a Taimu Widowmaker, but you see different skill sets between the two of being able to play a certain hero so damn well that you run a comp specifically to support that person on that hero, or you have a player who can fit into any composition anytime. And I think There's like just two different ways to become or to be able to transcend and have people call you a Widow player or a Flex player or something like that.
Yeah, I guess it would be something analogous in more traditional sports like a basketball team. Like these basketball teams that are known more for team play, like the Spurs have been in the past versus, you know, say the Cavs that have a bunch of giant big name players. And both of them can win championships and both of them can succeed, but one of them definitely gets a lot more hype and a lot more publicity than the other. So it's just, I guess, whatever character or culture, you know, your specific team is. So it'll just be great to at least have that option. And I think that's the point that we were all trying to make there. Okay, next bit of news. Let's, why don't we move on? We've got World Cup 2017. So that was definitely the biggest bit of news that was announced this past week. And the World Cup is quite different. And they've made what I would call improvements to the entire process, and even just the number of countries that qualify for it, and they actually have a specific process for doing that. So the top 32 countries that have the highest average SR, I guess, is it for the top 100 players? Yes, for the top 100 players too, will qualify for the World Cup event. So there's this collectiveness in terms of national, you know, just from your nation and stuff, to try to become generally the most skilled Overwatch nation, so that you at least even qualify for this event. And it looks like the series will be 4 live group events.
Before we get to that, we should talk about, with those 100 players, about the whole council that gets made for those 100 players.
Yeah, I was going to get to that in a second, but
I kind of placed them in the wrong order. That's my bad.
Yeah, no, that's okay. We can talk about that. So another thing that they came up with, at least the concept of having a national committee. So this would be something similar to like an Olympic committee that we see, you know, in, again, in sports. And this would be selected by, I think there's nominees,
Blizzard.
Right? Yeah, it would be by Blizzard. And I think there's nominees though, right? No? Like even with the committees?
So they'll select up to 10 nominees per eligible country with expertise in the field, including analysts, coaches, right, statisticians, and other authorities in the Overwatch esports community. And then those players from there will vote on who they want to see in the roster for their nation.
Right. And then once those are selected, I think the 3 people will be selected. And from there, those 3 people will select the team that will be representing the nation. And, you know, I think the point of that is just not to make it a popularity vote, kind of what it was last year. It wasn't completely a popularity vote, but there was a lot of that aspect integrated into the whole process, which was fine because, you know, it was supposed to be more of a fun event, and, you know, it got everybody hyped too, and everybody involved and interactive and all that stuff. But this time around, I feel like it's more about really making it a competitive event, seeing which country really is truly the best country.
Absolutely. And as amazing as the Overwatch World Cup was last year in terms of the hype, the viewership, the storylines, everything, it was great. It was easily the best event we've had in Overwatch so far in terms of all of those things. The production value is great. There was one big blemish, in my opinion, which was teams like France got completely royally shafted.
Yeah.
You know, the French national team could potentially be the best in the world right now. I mean, it's literally the Rogue Squad. You could basically just take that squad and that would be the French national's team. They're a very good team. They could probably beat any other national team in the world outside. You know, there's only a handful of teams that can actually compete at that level. And they just got completely screwed over in terms of the players that they had on their team, basically because of the voting system. So looks like Blizzard did understand that well, and they looked at feedback and they decided to adjust it this time. So in theory, that shouldn't be the case anymore. And to me, this just makes it all the more exciting. First of all, I think it's a good call to use your SR rating to define who's going to make the cut. It's going to encourage all the pros to be playing ranked when they can, which, you know, helps the whole community.
And less Smurfs action.
Yes, less Smurfs. Yes, yes, yes. Fantastic benefit of that.
That's a good point.
I think expanding to 32 countries can only be good. I think that's awesome. We're going to see 32 teams and countries from around the world. And, you know, 32, like, you're going to have a lot of, like, probably teams that are no name to go in to the event, but then after the event, you see new players and teams and emerging from that, as we did see from guys like Mickey from the Thailand team, mm-hmm. who now plays for Envious. So that's going to be awesome as well. And it's just exciting because think about the teams that are going to be competing. You're going to have an all-star USA team, Canada team, France, Sweden, Finland, Korea, Russia. All these teams did pretty well last year, except not Canada so much. But it's gonna be really exciting. Like, any of those teams could beat any other one, most likely. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm so glad that they're expanding on this model.
What's even more sick, in my opinion, about this, that makes me actually enjoy the whole idea of what they have, is that it's not like a popular vote from a country that can, like, band together and choose friends that shouldn't be in there or the likes. You have analysts, you have coaches, you have statisticians, you have people chosen by Blizzard outside, like, you know, the TF2 boys or you know what I mean? Like a clique.
I mean, there's
people outside that clique to help influence the vote. Obviously, the click will kind of choose the better players in general, but still, you could have like people choosing their friends or wanting to choose their friends and get people to vote for the friends because they want to have them come to BlizzCon, you know? So I like the way that they're including other people. I'm assuming, to be honest, that like being in Germany and a part of Germany, that I would actually be one of the 10 people. I don't know if I'm since I'm American, if I'm counted as German or not, or what? Whatever. Like a lot of casters have potential to be chosen to be a part of this whole selection process.
Are you making yourself a German now all of a sudden?
I know plenty of people last year that were from one country living in another country, and they got offers for both countries to participate in the World Cup, and they had to choose which one did they want to go for. So I don't know, there might be a chance that I could actually play on Germany if I'm good enough, but it won't happen. But I would imagine that because like I'm in Germany, I know a lot more of the German players and will have a chance to like give my expertise in who should be on the team kind of thing.
Man,
I don't know. I didn't even think about that, to be honest. Like ZP Hex, they'll probably be talked to, probably be part of like the council to choose North American players. Like I see no reason at all. Like even AlphaCast, who participated last year, there's a lot of the French players will probably be on the council. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking that at least. Who knows?
Well, I mean, like AlphaCast, that makes sense because he's French. But I would think that you would, you know, not to ruin any opportunities for you, Jason.
Bro,
but,
don't ruin my hopes. I can hit that SR. I can hit that average SR to qualify for these things.
I know people last year who didn't have citizenship. I know, but that's last year.
And they
that's
still
not
got
this
kicked.
Year. I mean, that's...
Shh. God.
I would think you would need to just, I mean, it would just be more, you know, in line with this whole nationalism thing, and it would make more sense. But to your original, your first point, which is it's going to be less political and less clicky and all that stuff, that's true. There's still a chance of it. There's no way to make a you know, just some kind of process that's eliminates that completely, but it will definitely be, you know, less likely than it was before, and just way better than just popular vote. Obviously, you know, having content makers be a representative of your team and things like that. At least from a competitive standpoint, there was a reason why they did last year, and it made sense. Taking a look at this rating, this ranking, any surprises to you guys, or this is what you pretty much expected?
Well, obviously, actually, where's the link for the?
I'm surprised actually. United Kingdom was so high.
Yeah, so here's the thing, guys. This is based on the average SR of the top 100 players on the ladder. So it's going to bias teams that have, or excuse me, it's going to bias towards countries that have more active players. It's also going to bias towards better countries, but the sheer number of people in your pool really, really matters here. So on one hand, yeah, you don't, Canada should not be that high, most likely. Like Finland should be probably a lot higher. Russia should probably be a lot higher. But I don't hate this model because it does kind of bias towards the bigger communities as well. So like USA probably doesn't like, if you're going to do a power rankings,
just throw
Sweden,
it out there,
France,
man.
South Korea, those would be top three. Like, I don't think anyone could argue against that. Maybe Finland could make that top three. Maybe Russia could make that top. But the fact that Russia's number three, excuse me, the fact that USA is not number three is a good thing. I mean, USA is going to have a lot of fans. It's good to have USA with high ranking. And you know, there's no other really, really good way of doing this anyway. Like, I don't know how else they do this other than base it off average SR of top players. So I'm totally fine with this model, even though you could certainly argue USA, Canada, UK shouldn't be quite as high as they are. I think this is fine, in my opinion.
It gives the, you know, the nations as a whole something to kind of, you know, come together and try to achieve. That's the part I like about this. Can you manipulate? I mean, there's ways to obviously manipulate or play a ton and you know, just overvalue yourselves in this kind of ranking system. But overall, I think it does work well. And we're talking about the stuff at the top. Stuff at the top doesn't even matter, guys. What matters is right here. This is what matters in this 32, 33, 34 area.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so, you know, these countries are going to be fighting it out, and they're
look
so
at,
close.
Oh, I mean, look at Israel for me. Look at Israel for me. I'm curious. Where's Israel on this one?
24.
24.
Okay, they're in there.
So,
in there.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, Israel has the number one, I don't know if he's still number one at the moment, number one EU-ranked player with Cafe, who played last year for Israel, who's like dragging them up super hard at like 4.6K or 4.7K or something ridiculous.
And this is like their average is the Masters, right? So it's interesting to see how what the range is actually for the top 100. I think that would be kind of interesting to see too. Not just the median, but the how low it goes for the top 100. Because I would have assumed that everybody would have been in, you know, maybe not Grandmasters, but the Masters and above, right? And you don't quite see that at the end, at least at the bottom. Well, actually, you see 3,500 above.
Yeah,
I guess
they're all Masters.
Just Masters, yeah.
Top 500, but, you know, or sorry, for top 100, but barely.
Yeah.
Hey, right. Ben, let's go move to the Philippines. We have a chance.
There you go.
We have to push the average SR up enough to the top 20.
All right, let's go to the United Arab Emirates.
New Zealand's easier, man. You speak English. You can
actually, New Zealand is beautiful, so let's
accent.
Go there.
Yeah,
I wonder how the internet is, though.
You just need 10. Jason, you can affect that, right? 10. It's like literally 10.
I'm sad to look at Estonia. Like, Valetaj is from Estonia. You have Ukraine, which like houses quite a few really good Eastern European players, and a lot, I mean, those alone could make a team that can compete easily with the top 10, and yet they might not even have a chance to compete because their average SR isn't high enough.
Yeah, and those listening on the on the podcast right now, what we're talking about are the people ranked at 30, you know, 30 through, I don't know, 30 or 30 through 40, because 32 teams make it, right? So talking Switzerland, Austria, United Arab Emirates, New Zealand, Hungary, Czech Republic, Romania, Ukraine, Chile, Estonia, Saudi Arabia. And there's more below it, but those are just the ones I would say in that crazy range that's possible to get number 32. It's pretty exciting.
I feel like we're going to see a train of pro players duoing with like lower ranked people in their own country just to drag their average SR up.
This is the first game.
Five man stack,
the first portion of the Overwatch World Cup is going to be everyone trying their best, their absolute best, to try and bring up their whole country's rating one game at a time.
I wonder if we're going to see a lot of 6-man queues like that. Like, are we going to see 6-man queues trying to raise the SR average of their team? That'd be really interesting.
Probably. That brings everybody together. It's cool in a way. It's fun, kind of a little bit of a messing with the ladder in a way too. But at least it's only at the top. It's not messing, I think, in anything else. In the, I guess, the more popular ranges on the ladder. Anyways, really exciting. But it looks like voting will be starting in 20 days, or qualification ends in 20 days, or 21 days, and then voting will be shortly after that. So we'll definitely be keeping up with this, obviously, here on this show. And I'm excited. You know, it's cool that they, you know, when I know they were asking around. I'm sure they asked, I'm sure they asked you guys too, just your opinion on how to do World Cup better. And it looks like they came up with something good. So props to them for doing that. And I'm sure this will be at BlizzCon again, right? Yeah, it looks like playoffs.
Yeah, it's been announced.
So, yeah.
The finals will be there. But I mean, there's still some format we could talk about.
Yeah,
so you kind of skipped over that. We have to go back to. So there's four live group stage events in Europe, North America, and Asia. So out of those three regions, they're going to be doing four events total. I don't know. I don't think it's four within each region. I think it's just four in total. So like probably one for Europe, one for North America, and like two for Asia. And then you'll see live qualifiers in groups of eight. And at each group stage event, we'll see eight national teams going head to head for a full week. That's what's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a live qualifier, but being played out over a week. And each team going head to head, like round robin group stage. That's a ton of games and a ton of content.
That's gonna be awesome, man. I can't. Oh my god, I can't wait.
But we had two or three days of games during BlizzCon last time for the group stage, and then it moved into BlizzCon, which was one day. So like, yeah, there's a lot of games to be played that everyone's gonna love to watch.
Well, it looks like is this right? The finals is played at BlizzCon.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Oh man, I was hoping there'd be more than that. Wait, with the top two finishers automatically qualifying
for the
finals.
Maybe it's
like
18.
There's probably eight teams. Okay, eight teams. That's gonna be great.
Yeah. What else would they do?
I know they can't really fill that event. If I mean they have like one, like 2 hours. That's it. That'd really be crappy. So eight teams at World Cup will be great. They'll probably have it both days, and that'll be plenty to watch when you're there in the mini stadium that they always have at BlizzCon. So it'll be a lot of fun for sure. All right, another bit of Blizzard news here. I think, Ben, did you add this? You had this, right?
I did, yes.
Let me see. So cheat makers. Overwatch has, Overwatch cheat makers have been told to pay $8.6 million to Blizzard. So I'm assuming they've been sued for copyright infringement.
Yeah, a little international legal intrigue there. California court orders German firm Bossland to pay $8.6 million to Blizzard for copyright infringement because they are altering the game code without a license to do so. That's the legal way that they're going about it. But let's be honest, whenever a cheat maker gets squashed, everyone wins. Everyone rejoices, except for the tiny, tiny, tiny portion of people that cheat. By the way, I haven't seen any cheaters recently. I think I've had one game where one guy looked suspicious and other people on my team were like, okay, he's definitely a cheater, but I didn't see any conclusive evidence. And that was like literally once in the last month. I don't know, Jason, are you seeing any cheaters out in EU?
No, not really. There was one like last season called Israel, but that's basically it.
I think a lot of the cheaters may be in Korea, but either way, this is a win-win for everybody.
There was a post, though, on like our Overwatch today of some guy apparently just DDoSing people to get his rank up, and he's like, he's top 500 with it. I don't know if you guys saw that today. He's like literally calling out in the middle of the game, all right, I'm disconnecting Reinhardt in 2 seconds, and then 1, 2, and then he gets kicked out of the game. So maybe that's the next step. Stop the DDoSer.
That's pretty bad. Yeah, to be able to. I mean, that sounds like that what was going on in Korea, right? Like that type of just disconnecting other people and really ruining games in that way, more so than tools that just help you aim and aim bots like that. Well, regardless of what it is, they're cracking down on it. You know, seems to be making a difference, at least in terms of the volume of cheaters out there. And yeah, just keep going at it, man. Whoever, whatever team, the security team or the, I don't know what team that would actually involve on the Blizzard side of things. Just keep at it. Doing a good job.
I saw a post today, like within our own company, about this actually, about the cheaters being banned. And apparently, really? Like this company has tons of lawsuits against it, but none of them are actually really moving forward. If I'm not mistaken, I saw it. I'm trying to find it right now, so I'm looking away from the camera. Maybe I'll find it a little bit. But yeah, like apparently, they have a lot of lawsuits, but none of it's actually being
dealt with.
Leave it to the multi-billion-dollar company to, you know, put their legal team to action here.
Yeah, I'd be bored otherwise. You gotta do something. All those lawyers just sitting around. We don't want them twiddling their thumbs, of course. Okay, well, anyways, why don't we move on to some news, some player and team news here. We've only got a couple things, but hold on, let me change the heading here. We have something with Envious that came out. It was an interview with Harry Hook, I believe it was. Let me bring it up. Yeah, it was Harry Hook on, what site is this? Just so I can, it looks like,
it's Reddit, but it's like Zataka? His Twitter.
Yeah, well, it was on a Spanish site, I believe, Zataka. And the Reddit thread translated it a bit. Oh, okay. But a few things came up here. You know, the biggest thing to take, I think, from the article was that they're trying to figure out the best way to adapt to what's going on right now in the metagame. And it looks like they're going to need to mix some things up. You know, whether it's move people to different roles, have, you know, maybe Mickey play something else or have Harry Hook go back to Lucio. There's like a lot of different things that can happen. Even the mention of maybe picking up a seventh player, which it sounds like they don't really want to do, but the option's on the table too. And, you know, this is something that we talked about maybe a couple weeks ago too, just in terms of Envy and when they got knocked out of Apex really quickly and just even the current meta not matching up to what their roster presents. Are you guys surprised about this? Are you surprised that they're trying to make some internal changes first, or do you even think it's possible with their current roster?
Not surprised at all. I mean, this is something we talked about explicitly on the show. First of all, we haven't seen Envious join any tournaments recently. There's probably a reason for that. Obviously, they were just in Korea. I know Taimu just made his way back to North America the other day, so perhaps it was just they're all flung across the world and not in North America together. But it seems like, you know, they've been off the grid for a little while since getting knocked out of OGN. But yeah, absolutely. Their team was perfect for the standard meta composition of last uh, of well, I guess the previous meta, where Taimu was fitting really, really nicely into the Roadhog role. And of course, we saw D.Va 24/7 all day coming out of Mickey. Now that we're favoring these dive comps, who's going to play Winston in this comp? Is it going to be Mickey? You know, who's going to be playing Winston? If Mickey's playing Winston, then who's going to be playing Genji? Who's going to be playing Pharah? Yes, Taimu can play Tracer, but it's not like it's his bread and butter. So it totally makes sense that they're looking to add someone else to this roster, a seventh man, which is something we've talked about on the show as well. And I got to say, I think I called it on this show that Mickey would be going towards the projectile role because we've seen his Genji. It's pretty good. We've seen it on stream, I think maybe once or twice in pro matches. But I think seeing Mickey go the route of doing more and more projectile work, maybe playing Pharah, maybe playing Genji, he could play Tracer as well. Makes a lot of sense. But then the question is, who are they swapping in? Who are they swapping out? There was some talk of Harry Hook, maybe even going back to Lucio. Mm-hmm. Then potentially if they add a seventh man, would that be Internet Hulk sitting the bench for somebody else to come in and play Winston? Or is he going to go back to Winston? So a lot of open questions, but ultimately not surprised at all to see this.
I mean, they verified the weakness like that we already knew they had was no projectile player. And he says even in the interview that like Taimu and him cannot play it. They can play it, but not at the high level that they need to. And we were always wondering, when are they going to have a Genji player? And I mean, the times we have seen it, it wasn't really spectacular. So I don't know. This is a question we've had, right? Remember when Lunatic High picked up two players? They picked up Zumba and Who Are You? And they still had Tasia and Dean in the team. And we were asking, like, are they going to leave Who Are You as a specialist for Genji and then just rotate him in when they need him? Or are they going to try to have like a sub to come in whenever they kind of need to mix someone into the team? I don't know. I feel like I'm actually glad that they're looking at changing roles instead of picking up a sudden player as like the go-to thing or like just trading someone out, because the team at its core has worked. So you don't want to just kind of get rid of something that's already worked for you before. Just figure out what's going wrong and maybe change things up. Maybe allow Mickey to just focus on projectile, like have him be that player they need and see if it can work out.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the chemistry that they have is great. So I agree with you. I'm glad that they're looking internally first. And I'm hopeful that they can figure it out. But man, when you compare it to some of those Korean teams right now, you know, and you're looking at just even projectiles, even if Mickey can play Genji to a certain level, I don't think it's to the level as the Hawksalls and the Who Are Yous and just the superstars that we see in the, you know, just the Korean Apex League right now. So I think that with Envious, I mean, Envious has always been, you know, successful in a lot of ways based on strategy, based on working as a team and things like that. But to a certain point, that's going to come to an end. You know, like you're going to need individual, you know, just the best players in the world together working as a team to be able to compete against these teams. But, you know, that window, I think, is not closed completely yet, and we can still see Envious do well. I just think that event, they'll have to reevaluate some of their roster at some time in the near future to really compete against the Korean teams. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah,
all right, so next up we got an AMA from one of the players off of the Korean team Runaway, Kaiser. And is Kaiser who's officially the captain of Runaway? Is it Runner or is it... It's Runner, right? That's the official captain of that team, I believe. Yeah, yeah. Kaiser is their tank player. They're the Reinhardt, and in my opinion, best Reinhardt in the world. He did an AMA, which led to a few things that were very, very interesting. One thing that was interesting to me that we don't actually have listed here in the notes is that before their recent run or just the Apex runs that they had, he was playing. He didn't even have a computer at home. He was playing at internet cafes, you know, or PC banks, and that was his only way of playing Overwatch. And it's amazing that he can get so good just playing at cafes like that. Also, I think you put here that he was never interested in being a pro. It was just kind of like more of a hobby. But what are some of the things that you guys thought were interesting from the AMA?
Well,
killing me, Chad, man.
Even more from what we talked about last week with Runner just being like this superhero of esports, motivating his team. That was good to see more corroboration for that storyline.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's crazy that he's playing in a PC cafe. It's something we've actually okay, this is only tangentially related, but Korean esports infrastructure is what makes them so good. It's the team houses, the coaches, the work ethic, the cultural acceptance for esport in general. So very recently, we've started to see some StarCraft II pros who are teamless and not in a team house winning GSLs. It's the mold is finally starting to be broken a little bit. It sounds like in esports in general in Korea, where you don't necessarily have to be part of one of those huge orgs to make a name for yourself. So, I mean, if anything, that kind of stands out to me here.
Okay. Jason, anything
to
add?
Silence is deafening.
Anything to add?
No, because you took my points. I put those in there for me.
I didn't even look at it, but those are actually the things that I was thinking about too. But I mean, now that I'm looking at the points, I realize a lot of the things that we had the same thoughts on. Okay, I'll bring up another point. I'll bring up another point just that's not exactly related to the AMA, but it's something I was thinking about, which is, I think right now we're seeing just the esports center, at least from the standpoint of top play and where people want to go to practice, being in Korea right now. And we've seen this happen before. We see this happen in League of Legends. We historically have seen in StarCraft 2, where you have to go there and play on the ladder and play and scrim these teams to raise your level of play, because whatever region you're in, you're not able to do that. Now my question to you guys is this the beginning of forever? I mean, are we already there? Are we already to the point where all of our teams are going to be flying over there and doing boot camps and maybe even living over there after a while? Because that kills me if that's the case, because it just means we're going to see them less here, and that really, really sucks.
Well, I mean, OW League, who knows?
Yeah, true. Okay.
Everything hinges on OW League, so, we're getting closer and closer.
Well, but even with OW League, let's just say we have a North American region. Sure, they're going to be playing games here and all that kind of business. But and that's good. That, from the standpoint as a fan and a spectator, we'll get to see them playing NA matches against NA teams. But in terms of practice, will they still be going over to Korea and scrimming those teams, knowing that they're the best teams? And will they even scrim? Like, will the Korean teams even scrim them in those particular cases?
I am yet to see any evidence that the Korean teams are unequivocally the best. I think if you look at North America and Europe and you put them, these two regions together, there are so many pros right now. Like there are enough pros. There are currently already probably a dozen top tier North America. If you add all of Europe and North American's best teams together, you could probably have a dozen plus that you could call like true pro teams. Obviously Korea, there's quite a few really, really talented teams as well. But I think the talent pool is big enough globally that won't necessarily have to be how it's done. It's how you had to do it in StarCraft 2, probably League of Legends as well. But I don't think we're quite there yet with Overwatch.
I think, I don't know, I maybe disagree. I think Korean teams are going to be like generally better than most of the Western teams, but not necessarily just in terms of skill, but in terms of like, if you set a day and a time of a scrim with them, they're going to be there on that day at that time. They're not going to be like 10, 15 minutes late or cancel on you last second. They're going to be there to practice. And that's something that Korean teams, I think, will always do better than Western teams. Practice, they won't leave you hanging necessarily. And they treat practice like practice. They treat it like it's a serious thing instead of just scrimming around for fun. And I think that's something that most teams really can't get in the Western world. Like the amount of scrims I hear canceled from teams is frustrating.
I wonder if there will be a time where they just won't scrim with anybody. You know, like if you're the best team, let's say you're a Korean team and you're the best team in the world, and scrimming other Korean teams, that's one thing, but having a Western team come over here, I guess outside of the companies doing dealings themselves, and maybe there's some kind of money dealings themselves to arrange this type of practice, goodwill type of practicing, I think that at some point that stops, because it's a competitive game. You want to be the best. Like, why would you, why would you help your this other team try to get better by, sharing tactics or even just helping them improve in any way?
already saw that happen in China with APEC. There was a certain team not practicing with a certain team because they felt like there was nothing they could learn from them. So like, all right, well, we're not going to help you when we get nothing out of it. So no. Yeah, we saw that happen a couple times. Not going to name any teams, obviously, but.
Yeah, that's the part that worries me. It's like, it's worrisome because that could just stop and, you know, the teams could just be, I mean, if there's nothing, I guess, in-home or in-house or just in North America, for instance, there's no type of network here that can, you know, develop, you know, to get these teams into the highest level of play, then we could see a future that could be dominated by a lot of the Asian teams for a while. And I don't know, that future is a little bit scary for me because I don't know. I don't want to see necessarily what happened in, you know, that we've seen in League of Legends where it's just like, yeah, sure, we have regionalization, but, you know, we saw the Asian teams just dominate for a long time, you know, and it took a lot of those teams going over there and boot camping and things like that, but that was probably made available by the organizations.
I'm going to hold true to my pride, I guess, maybe, that North America and Europe are going to be okay in this global battle. I think we're going to be okay. I think we have, well, if you look at the history of FPS, esports, Quake, Counter-Strike, so on,
mm-hmm. Yep.
The West has traditionally had a major edge over Asia. There's only been a handful of Asian teams and players that have made big marks on any of those games. So I think given the background, the last 10 years of esports, you know, we have a fighting chance here. I believe.
Okay. All right. So another bit of news that we have is Grego is officially a free agent now. So his Cloud9 contract has officially expired. I know Grego was already trying to set up another team at one point. You know, like we talked about, we had him on the show. Actually, that was like a while ago. Yeah. So, you know, this is no surprise. I mean, he's pretty much not been affiliated with C9 for a while now. So any thoughts on Grego? Could you see him being a good fit anywhere?
This is not really major news at all because he's already been looking for another team for a while. I just kind of threw it in simply because Grego's like super good, man. Have you seen this? Like, this is he's legitimately one of the best Lucios in the game, I believe. So I'm just surprised that he hasn't found a team yet. I don't know what it is. We were all kind of postulating, thinking, oh, maybe he'll end up on this NRG roster, which no offense to Ajax. I don't really know the guy, but this NRG roster is already the most star-studded roster you could ever have. If they had Grego play the Lucio role for that team, like, my God, that would have, they're already going to be one of my favorite teams to watch. That would have made it even more so. So. Might as well just build
a team based on followers. And that's what
it seems like they're doing.
Yeah.
I just want to see Grego get a team, so give him a shout out.
No, he is a fantastic Lucio, and you know, we've been seeing him, you know, just with some of the content he's been showing too. He is amazing. He's been amazing for a long time. There's been no question about that. Jason, any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on Grego?
Not really. Okay. No. I mean, it's been kind of known he wasn't on the Cloud9 roster when he was in Korea. But just kind of sucks he hasn't been able to bounce back. But then again, there's not really a shortage of talent in North America. So we've seen a lot of teams come up out of nowhere and really surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, events. We've got a new event that was announced this past week called Rivalcade. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, it just came out of nowhere. I just like was, wow, okay, another North American event. I might as well just pile on, just have them even overlap a little bit. And this is the Overwatch Rumble. It's definitely a combination of invited teams and there's a qualifying round too. And the invited teams are 8 of the teams that you'll recognize: the Envious, Rogue, Immortals. Let's see, Complexity, Cloud9, Luminosity, and Splice. Is that right? Did I forget anybody? I think I got
Selfless. Oh, Splice, Complexity, Cloud9. No, Renegades isn't in there.
No, Renegades is not on there.
Immortals, Envious, Rogue, Evil.
Yeah. So a lot of the top teams, I think the biggest teams to really talk about are C9 and Envious here. Given that
finally,
we're going to see them in one of these events. So
and who knows if there will be any roster shakeups for either team. I've been hearing rumors.
Really? For Cloud 9 too?
I don't know.
You're going to mention that and not say anything? Okay.
I don't have any details.
All right.
But, is it just me? Or is it weird to see complexity in there?
Complexity?
Yeah, complexity and even splice. Like, complexity...
Oh, should they be there?
I love them so much. I honestly do. But what team can't beat complexity right now? Well, like, they went 0-5 in their group.
In Pit Championship, it's basically no team.
Even CLG beat them, the team we haven't heard of since E-League. Like, I personally don't think they should be there. I feel like there's way more teams that deserve a chance. Like, for instance, you have, what, FaZe Clan?
Renegades.
Mm-hmm. LG Loyal, maybe Liquid. Splice, like, I can't remember the last time I really heard of them playing.
I don't even know who's on the roster anymore.
I know Graceful's with them.
Splice had a decent run in maybe a couple tournaments ago, but yeah, they haven't had huge results either.
Oh, right. So the Splice team is Baby Bay, Michael, yeah. Graceful's, iRemix, Meteoris, and Pure. So that should be interesting. At least it's a team we haven't seen in a while with this roster, so that should be good.
To your
but
point,
yeah, I totally agree. I would have liked to see FaZe, who we haven't seen much of lately. Yeah, I would love to see a couple other teams as well, Renegades.
Like, I'm not hating on them, but like, Complexity just literally has not had the results lately to be given an invite over some of these other teams.
Yeah, I think a lot of it still has to do with past history with Complexity, because it's been 3 events now that they haven't performed well, and this one is the worst, which we're about to talk about in a second with the Pit Championship, and it's time for a change. I mean, I mentioned it maybe a month ago that I'm wondering if they're taking a look at that. This was around the time when Hammers was being, I think, wooed by other organizations, where Jake was talking about, and he was mentioned that some big brands were taking a look at them too. So I think with Complexity, it might be time to reevaluate their current roster and make some big changes. But anyways, getting on with the Revivalcade, the Overwatch Rumble. The prize pool is $10,000, and there's a qualifier that's going to be April 18th that starts, and I'm not sure how you sign up for it. Is there a sign up anywhere on this page? You can go to rivalcades.com and just look up the OW Rumble, and you'll find it. You can click on one of the tabs. OW Rumble is one of the tabs, and they'll give you the full details.
This is pretty interesting. Okay, I actually missed this, Chan Man. But yeah, we're going to have open qualifier. It's going to actually have 8 teams advancing from it. So you've got 8 invited teams, and then there's 8 more slots. So we could, in theory, still see Renegades.
Yeah.
Exactly. We could, in theory, still see all those teams we just talked about, which would be cool. They'll just have to play through an open bracket.
We will. It just annoys me that they have to qualify over some teams who should have to qualify. I don't know.
Are these based on the rankings? I haven't looked at the rankings in a long time. Maybe Complexity is still ranked high on this, on the whatever the Gosu Gamer rankings. But it is odd at this point that these 2 teams were chosen. Regardless, you know, we'll see how they do, and hopefully we'll see some of the other ones get through the gauntlet. That's the qualifiers. And this event should be cool. You know, just more things to fill before Overwatch League is never a bad thing. Okay, well, let's move on to the Pit Championship, which has been the tournament that's been going on the last few weeks. We talked about EU a little bit last week. Jason gave us an update on that. And this last week we had the start of the NA groups go. Not quite. Are they finished now? Let me see what the standings are.
NA Group A is done.
But okay, NA Group B is done. Okay, so Group B is not done. Let me show the results here. But in the meantime, why don't you guys talk a little bit? Anything that stood out in terms of the teams, the results that you want to talk about a bit?
Complexity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
God,
keep piling it on.
Kicking the dead horse, dude. Jeez.
Jason will go low poor Complexity. I'm going to go high with CLG, nobody had any faith in this team, myself included. I had zero faith in this team. Yet here they are in the second place in their group above LG Evil. I mean, there are 3 teams with a 3-2 scoreline, but they do the tiebreakers and a seeding based on map score, and Counterlogic Gaming coming out of nowhere. I'm really glad because, A, CLG is a really good brand. to be in the scene. We want them to be in the scene. We want them to have a strong team. B, we just hadn't seen anything from these guys at all. Like, we had just absolutely no data, no performances to base our expectations on. But congrats, man. They did it. I think another storyline for me is just, like, everyone in this meta right now is playing these dive comps. The one team that seems to be sticking to their Trident 2, Reinhardt, and Roadhog strategy is Selfless Gaming, who is 5-0 in their group. So everybody is going Pharah Mercy, Tracer, Winston, Soldier, most of, you know, that's the core of those, most of those teams. But here you go, Selfless, proving that you don't need to jump into that dive comp. What? Well, why are you making that face at me, Jason?
Because that's like the exact comp they ran during the entire Overwatch Monthly Melee.
And Selfless?
They ran Sinatra on Tracer and Defran on Soldier.
They do it 50% of the time. The other 50%, they do their standard Roadhog Reinhardt strategies. Yeah.
So I'm gonna go low twice here, actually. I'm gonna do a double punch.
Oh, damn.
Complexity 05. Come on. What the hell? We already talked about them. I'm gonna undercut what Fishstick said about CLG. Look at their group. What competition do they really have in their group besides LG Evil and Selfless? Come on. Two easy wins for Scaleforce and Complexity. Like, how do you lose those games? And it automatically puts them, like, in the top four. That's, I'm just going to undercut them and say, hey, yeah, I mean, we haven't seen them since E-League, but they're not really playing the hardest of groups. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be, like, the a-hole here, but that's my opinion on them. I want to see them play. All right, let's get them against Rogue. Let's get them against, you know, Selfless some more. Let's get them against a lot more of these top NA teams and see how they perform.
Well, at least they're not losing right from. So they're not. At least they're not losing. I mean, they're not at the bottom of the bucket to begin with. All right. So yeah, we haven't seen them. They could start off terribly. They're starting middle of the pack. I think that, you know, there's something to be said about that. You know, they're at least starting in a spot where they can set themselves up to maybe have some upsets and actually make it, you know, make some kind of run in this tournament by just having one upset versus, I don't know, something like Gale Force at this point. Which
I'm not saying I want to see them do bad. I want to see them excel. I want to see them perform. But yeah. I personally don't want to, like, overhype them yet until I actually see some, like, convincing big wins from them, you know?
Sure.
That's
sure.
Just me.
I mean, one thing I'll say about the results, and I didn't catch every single match, but I did catch one of LG Evil's matches. I have to say, man, like, I feel like LG Evil, and we actually have a viewer that asked a question that has something to do with this. I feel like they're on the way down. You know, like, all these NA teams, man, they have their highs, and their highs are, like, really good. But, man, when they start getting on that fall, a little bit of a fall, they just continue sliding, you know? Like, I don't see a recovery that's, like, between maybe just one event, they have a not-so-great showing, and then, you know, kind of recover the next event. And LG Evil, for me right now, should be behind Selfless, in my opinion. You know, like, it should be, like, 4-1. They should have just lost to Selfless. But, you know, we saw them drop another match recently, and, you know, they're tied now with CLG and Rise Nation. And from what I saw, you know, a month ago, they're better than that. Something's going on, and the meta hasn't really changed that much. They're a dive comp type of team.
No, they're having the most success with dive comp before the Winston buff.
Right.
So
if something's going on there, whether people are figuring them out or they're just struggling in some way.
I feel like they haven't really found their identity again since they were known as Hammer Esports playing like the quad tank setup. Like when we had Jake on, they were saying, yeah, we ran quad tank because it was the best comp at the time, and we did it. We got so good at it that we could beat people who were playing quad tank. And now they've had to like transition a little bit. You see Jake flexing with so many different heroes. You still see Vol doing it as well. Like, they haven't been able to lock down the comp that works for them 100% against a lot of these other teams. Because even, you know, back then, at the end of the month in Melee, they weren't necessarily against, like, Selfless caliber teams. I'm not saying, you know, LG Evil was bad at all. They're still a great team, but they just haven't been able to maybe, like, lock down what they can run and what works really well for them.
Yeah. Also, too, just the general feeling I get when I'm watching them and when they're not playing well is that, you know, I have a feeling that the teams are just focusing a lot more on Jake now, too, because a lot of it rides on his success. And we see that with other teams, too. But particularly LG Evil, I feel like if you shut down Jake, you shut down that team consistently. You know, every so often, and some of the other guys will be able to make up for it on a map or, like, on a control map, maybe just get a point from that. But generally speaking, if you take care of him, especially early in fights, it's just over. Like, they just run over LG Evil. And we've been seeing that more and more lately when that wasn't happening before. So hopefully they can, you know, kind of rebound from that, because I felt like they were a team on the rise, and now obviously they've plateaued and even fallen a bit there.
Well, don't worry, Chris. If we can look at these trends and make any guesses about the future, Selfless will have their huge downhill fall any second now. It's next week or the week after. They're going to just fall like a rock, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm enjoying watching Sinatra and DeFran like more and more every time I get a chance to watch the Selfless games. You know, I guess we didn't really round out EU, because the EU groups, I think, finished too in between when we had our last show. What do you guys think about Misfits right now? Obviously, Misfits is still undefeated, but I did get a chance to catch a couple of their matches, and I have to say, they were close. And I don't know if it's so much that the other teams are playing great, or if Misfits just is playing to the level of play that they're playing against more so than what they're capable of. So want to get your thoughts on that, particularly you, Jason, since you follow those teams a lot more.
Oh, okay. I was actually really, 5-0 doesn't tell the tale of Counterpit for them, because they had a 2-1 against Hammer Esports.
Yeah.
They had a 2-1 against Alternate Attacks. So already 2-1s against the two bottom teams. And they also had a 2-1 against Dignitas. And Dignitas, who I feel like barely scraping by, kind of shows that something's going on within the Misfits side. I mean, they've been back for a while from Korea. They've been practicing. They've been scrimming like every single day. I think Tivik even tweeted off that they had finally one day available, like free, and he spent that playing Diablo all day. You know, that's what he does. He's a gamer nerd. I don't know. I feel like there's two aspects to it. Like, I feel like you kind of got a really good analogy in there. They're kind of playing to the level of the teams they're against. Like even in Korea, I feel like they're doing a little bit better than they're currently doing here against these teams. But I don't know, maybe like the vacation, maybe they're not really too focused. Maybe they're looking at higher expectations. It's still a 5-0 of the group, but again, it's not necessarily the strongest group EU could put out against them.
Well, they've been switching around their roles a little bit, right?
Yeah, that was just recently.
You had Zebesai and Nevix kind of switching. Nevix, he was known as an insane DPS player. I think he was like the highest ranked person on the ladder for a little while, but he was playing support primarily for a little while. Zebosai, obviously no slouch either, but his experiments with Widowmaker haven't really, really panned out so far for Misfits. So Zebosai is now switching, at least for the time being, back to a support. Nevix moving into DPS, which a lot of people think makes a lot of sense, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah, and I to your point, I think that might have been something that stuck out to me whenever they were playing Hammers too. I think Nevix wasn't quite, you know, playing probably at the, you know, just at least the level that I expect from Nevix. Where, you know, Manitins and Tivik, I think, were playing fine. But, you know, anytime I think Nevix would get taken out earlier or just make some type of mistake, I felt like that was when they were most vulnerable, and maybe they even dropped a map at times. So I think you have something there. I think it's just going to take a little bit more time to adjust. I was just shocked, you know, like I just feel like Misfits should be crushing everybody over in that group. I mean, it shouldn't even be close, at least on paper. So watching even just some of the little sloppiness that I just don't expect from them, it's just surprising. Hopefully they'll get that, you know, maybe a little bit more focus going into the playoffs, which, or whatever the next group, whatever the next stage is. It's probably some kind of bracket stage, right, after this.
Up against SNG, Riders up against VV's Adventure, United against Dignitas, and Misfits against Laser Kittens.
Okay, there you go. Ooh, that should be fun. Laser Kittens and Misfits first round will be a good one. We still have group two though for NA before that, and that's FaZe, LG Loyal, Tempo Storm. I'm kind of curious to see that team. TL, You Guys Get Paid, I don't actually know too much about that team. And then Rogue. You know anything about You Guys Get Paid?
Nothing. Actually, oh God, I used to know. It used to be in my brain.
Yeah, they hold on. Let me pull this up, because they beat a team that was trying to qualify. They beat Fnatic. Yeah, they beat Fnatic. I remember in the qualifiers for Counterpit.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That's how they kind of got here.
Right. That's who they are. They beat Fnatic.
I mean, we know Moffitt.
My team right now. Yeah.
We know Moffitt and Psycho Waffle. Moffitt previously on Splice. Mm-hmm. And like Team Cell Omit, like the funny version of TSM. And then Psycho Waffle, he was on Method. So a couple of players with like some experience between them, picking up some like relatively unknown guys. I don't really know Space, Harry Butcher, Mr. Squishy, or Silk Thread, but seem to be doing well.
Okay. Well, let's see how this plays out. This should be finished by the end of the week. So I think then by the next time we talk, we should be starting to talk about playoffs.
We'll be in the middle of the playoffs.
Exactly,
actually,
right, yeah, in the middle of the playoffs. So excited to see that. Definitely tune in to the Overwatch Pit Championship, the stream, which is... Where's the stream at? I'll link it.
Overwatch Pit. It's the name of the stream.
It's just Overwatch Pit? Okay. Yeah, definitely check that out. The VODs are there, too, if you want to watch any of the previous matches. Meta discussion. Anything that you guys have noticed meta-wise that's different, except for what you mentioned with Selfless?
I mean, that's the storyline for me right now, is how quickly Pharaoh Mercy has kind of reappeared in the meta. The Mercy buff probably had a small bit to do with it. I think it's actually more so because of the Winston barrier buff. As someone that plays a fair amount of Winston and Pharah, having that Winston barrier up is a complete game changer. You know, it allows you so much more room and flexibility to work around points. So I think that's a big thing. And this is another thing that we talked about a little bit with wins a few weeks ago, but has been bouncing around in my head, is also the prevalence of Tracer. This is not just on attack, not just on control, but attack and defense on all maps. We're seeing, yep, Tracer get play, which, you know, if a month ago I never would have expected, but now it's just the new normal. You see Tracer on defense, on 2CP, on assault, on payload. Like, you just see it all the time. These are the kind of the interesting things going on in the meta right now. But as mentioned before, you don't necessarily have to do this to win, as we've seen from teams like Selfless, who are sticking to their Ryan and their Roadhog.
Yeah, Jason,
that's my take.
Any thoughts on this current state of Tracer being played a ton? Because it's being played a ton in Korea too, and just all across the board.
Mostly just due to the dive comp prevalence. The fact that whenever you see Tracer, like when we saw Sinatra at the Overwatch Anywhere Monthly Melee, he was like never focused because there was so much stuff happening with the Fran shooting a soldier, with the Winston in there. Like, there's so many things to focus on at one time that you get so much freedom as a Tracer. You get to build up the ultimates. You get to take one person on the fight almost every single time because you should have like a pulse bomb every single fight. You just have so much freedom, and we're not being focused. Mm-hmm. You're not really going to miss shots. There's no pressure on you. You're good to go. The Mercy, I'm so curious why people forgot how to play against Mercy. It's like she was super in the meta with first Pharah Mercy. I can remember the old meme of Luminosity with like, it was, who was it? It was
In Dust We Trust.
In Dust.
All the memes.
Yeah, because they always get caught playing Mercy, but it seems like everyone just forgot how to do that now, and Mercy's get so much freedom, not to mention the recent buffs that, as Ben pointed out, they can Guardian Angel away like quite often. Like, it's really hard to be locked down as a Mercy. And again, with dive comps, there's so much stuff happening that it's really hard to focus a Mercy down or focus, you know, such key targets like that.
Mm-hmm. She heals like instantly too. Like, you know, if you're like gonna dive her, you literally have to be on her like the entire time because she'll instantly start healing. It's crazy. All right, I think that's gonna continue for a while. I just don't see that changing in terms of like balance and the meta. And like you said with Sinatra, I feel like every time I'm watching Tracer or they're POVing Tracer, he's never even focused. He's just doing whatever he wants, and it's just a race to see who can wipe the others. Frontline before, you know, the other Tracer can, and it's an interesting dynamic, but it's so different than it was 3 or 4 months ago. Crazy. Okay. Somebody put what NRG's playing Monthly Melee. I guess somebody.
Yeah, I just came across this on the competitive Overwatch subreddit. Apparently, Harblue announced on his stream that NRG will be playing in the Monthly Melee, which isn't in itself newsworthy, other than the fact that we haven't seen this new NRG roster play in anything yet. So finally,
yes,
we get to see Harblue, IDDQD, Seagull, Dummy, Numlocked, Ajax. We're finally going to see this roster play, and I know a lot of people in chat are going to be excited about that. So
Can we just kind of look at the potential of what's going to happen here? They play and then they get smashed by everyone.
Jason,
I'm just saying, like, how hilarious would that be? It's not going to happen, but it would be hilarious. I don't know why. Just because they dodge so many tournaments because they don't feel like they're ready and they want to practice, and then they go into the first tournament and get smashed.
I just feel like this is Tiger Woods, man. It's like, is he playing a tournament? Is he not? He doesn't feel like he's good enough to play, and then when he plays, he doesn't have a good showing, and then he's out again for another few months again because of injury or whatever. I hope it's not something like that.
Well, the thing is, the teams they'll be playing against, because I kind of already know the team list, is not going to be easy. They'll be playing against like top tier teams. So
okay.
It's a good challenge for them to see where they kind of stack up against the best.
Yeah, measuring stick. Good stuff. Okay, well, why don't we give a quick shout out to the folks that listen to us via audio podcast, and lots of those folks are from iTunes. So I want to give a shout out to folks that have given us 5-star ratings as well as some nice messages, because that helps us out in a big way. Folks can find the overview easier when they're searching for Overwatch podcasts, if there are, you know, for at least our ratings, or there's more ratings and they're higher and that all that good stuff. So big shout out to Big Deal Owen and Angry Birds Are Greedy. And if you guys want to help us out and you guys listen to the audio podcast, go ahead and go to iTunes, and you can do that by looking for the show. You can do that also on Google Podcasts as well as SoundCloud too. And you can follow the podcast and like it or whatever you want to do. All right. Well, we got a few questions from some listeners, some fans of the show. Rishi B asks, why do you think the NA teams and specifically LG Evil and that he mentions here fluctuate in performances so much? Is it complacency, while the Korean teams generally only improve or get worse over much larger periods of time? Is that true? Does the Koreans, I mean, I feel like the Koreans fluctuate.
Yeah, the Koreans fluctuate a ton. Yeah. We saw that happen with the Kangju yeah. Panthera and Unseo not making it as far as we thought they would. So I don't think it's different from region to, like, we see a lot of teams go up and a lot of teams go down, but we have talked about it on the show, so he's definitely right. We've talked about the fact that NA, we never know what's going on, because one team looks absolutely completely dominant for 2 to 3 weeks, and then the next 2 to 3 weeks we see them just kind of fall back to the middle of the pack. We've seen it with Immortals, but they're kind of back up on top again. We're seeing it happening right now, it seems like, with LG, Evil, and Selfless is certainly on the ascendance right now as well. All of these teams, it's not like they drop into irrelevance. They still remain, you know, within the pack of the rest of the North American teams. I don't know. I hard to pinpoint one thing. I guess you could make the case that they get figured out. A lot of people in chat were saying, and we were saying as well, that a lot of LG Evil's success is based off how ham Jake goes. So a lot of other teams are like pinpointing that and trying to shut down Jake earlier on. That seems to have worked. So maybe that's it, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm going to piggyback off that, actually. I think there's two things to it. There's A, meta changes, like patch updates.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Cause teams to fluctuate from like first to last. But also B, each team learns the patch at different paces. So you have Team A, who instantly clicks. They're like, all right, we got the meta. And because they click so quickly with it, they can play it better than everyone else. But Team, you know, Z over here, who takes them, you know, maybe a couple of weeks to finally figure out how to play correctly and get their skills up to par on the heroes that they need, that will eventually pass A because they have like the potential to be better than them. It just takes them a lot longer to figure it out. So I think there's just a lot of different speeds that teams learn how to play the current meta, or like the most played compositions. And then once they do, they, you know, switch. I think there's maybe even potential for a little bit of burnout for some teams as well at the same time, playing so many tournaments, so many scrims every day.
Yeah, I think that's cool. That last point is really good too. Burnout is definitely a thing. These guys play, I mean, some teams even scrim 5-6 days a week. And that's a lot of Overwatch. It's a lot of being around the same people for hours and hours upon the day. And that can obviously reflect in your play. And when you lose once, right, people like us, we make a big deal out of it, right? And it can be a lot of pressure and affect your play. So maybe it's our fault, guys. Maybe it's completely our fault that happens. In Korea, though, I think it's a little bit different. I mean, I think we have a little bit of the same. Definitely patch changes make a big difference. But, I mean, we're seeing Runaway just make a huge push at the end of, you know, Apex, this season of Apex, which you know, but I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't think we had a huge meta change right at that moment. I think the meta change actually happened a little bit before that. So, you know, you have just teams magically come together, you know, like we had that with Envious, right? With Mickey. Mickey was like a magic element to their run last year. So just different things, different reasons. But overall, I would say burnout and figuring out the meta are probably the best ones that we listed there. Next up, we've got Nick D. He asked the question. It's okay. This one's kind of a two-parter. It's
TLDR is why are players giving it a disadvantage for playing with friends and groups?
There you go. There you go.
On ranked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's easy.
Okay.
That's a super easy answer. Because when you solo queue, there's no guarantee that every person in your game will communicate and or be able to play the heroes that you need. When you queue with multiple people, you're guaranteeing that two or three or four or five or six out of the group will communicate with you 100% and also switch heroes when they need to, or they'll be able to fill a certain role. So thus, having those advantages on your side, you'll get queued against people of higher rating.
Okay.
I think that's the easiest way to explain it.
I mean, I'm conflicted because I totally understand the logic. In theory, if you're playing with a pre-made group, you could play with them every single day. Your teamwork could be on fleek. Everyone's got their roles down perfectly. You know, I only play this character or this subset of characters. You only play those. In theory, at the same time, in practice, nobody six stacks. I mean, maybe they do at like lower ranks, but nobody I know six stacks.
Or if you're from Brazil, trying to get top 500.
Or you're trying to game the system, yeah. Nobody I know six stacks. None of the pro players ever six stack. Like when a pro player is streaming and six stacking, it's like a miracle. Like everyone, it's like a legendary moment that the subreddit like freaks out and jizzes their pants over because it's so awesome. Because it is fucking awesome. Let's be honest. So I'm conflicted about this because I get it, but also I want to be able to six stack and not be penalized horribly for it. What happens half the time when you six stack is you end up, if you're not playing against another six stack, which does happen sometimes, you'll end up playing against a team that has like 100 or more plus SR advantage on average, because it's the system is like, okay, you have this SR, but since you're a six stack, we're going to adjust it up. So it makes it really, really hard. And then you gain less SR and you lose more in those situations too.
Double whammy. Yeah.
So it's a double whammy, and it makes it so nobody ever wants to six stack. So I'd like to be able to. I really would. I think it's tons of fun. So anyway,
I mean, my thoughts are like they shouldn't discourage playing with friends, and this is a way to discourage that from happening. I know they're looking at it from the standpoint of whatever, trying to figure out what's most fair, but even that is still, you know, there's still a little gray element to it. Sure, like somebody might not play the role that you want them to play, but they may play the role that they play just better, you know, like than they would that proper role. So like having to formulate that out, I think is so gray that I think they shouldn't even do it at all. And I, right now I have to actually contemplate, whether I want to, you know, like I duo with my son all the time, right? It's like, do we want to like triple? Because then we're going to take a bigger, shut up. Then we're going to be taking more of a hit. And like, do we really want to do that? And the fact that I even have to think about that is terrible. Like I shouldn't have to do that, you know. And like right now I just want to play with friends, and there's been a couple times where I've actually avoided playing with friends just purely because of that. And I don't know, I think that's bad for their game.
The person who asked the question, Taiga, is actually in chat, and he said, but why is it your fault that there are people who do not communicate in solo queue? Why not have communicating?
It would encourage it. Yeah.
Well, no, the thing is, ranked isn't really 100% test of skill. It's a test of your mental fortitude to keep grinding it out. Because
you're right.
That you will 100% get, you cannot possibly win in any world, in any universe, in any reality, because you have a guy purposely trying to lose, or you have a guy purposely only trying to play Junkrat, or Torbjorn. Like, there's just ways you cannot win games, and those are the games that test if you're going to keep grinding it out. And you ask any top player, any top 500 player, and the amount of trolls they've had in their games is ridiculous. But it's a test of, can you keep strong mentally to grind it out?
It is, and it's made to be like that, right? Because they even have a mechanism that tries to get you from losing too many times in a row. So that game that you get as a freebie sometimes will, you know, who knows how they formulate that game. It's not necessarily just some, they don't give you like a, I think the SR balancing is still all very consistent. So if they give you a game that's supposed to be a softball, it's still SR, like in the range of what it should be in terms of matchups, but it's obviously a weird collection of people. And we all get put in that weird collection of people like from time to time. And I think that's why we have those terrible games. So to your point, yes, it is supposed to be a grind, but at the same time, you know, again, it's not supposed to discourage you from wanting to play with other people and friends. And I think that's what happens. Like, what's the worst? Like, what happens if they do it? Like, what's the worst thing that happens?
To who does what?
Like, what's the worst thing that happens if, like, there's no change to SR if you 6-stack and 5-stack and whatever, 3-stack?
I don't know. People only 6-stack, but is that even a problem?
Is that bad? I mean, is that actually a bad thing? I don't think.
Well, you might as well
is.
Just open a separate queue. Just do team ranked, and your SR is different in team ranked than solo queue ranked.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, the question is suggesting in chat.
Yeah.
To go full tilt mode here, because this happened to me today, and I'm totally gonna just rage on this for a second, make myself feel better.
Okay.
If you ever like 2-3-man stack and you're significantly lower than people in the game, don't auto lock in DPS like an asshole. I was Grandmaster today, 4100 playing. I had 2 diamonds queued with master players against a full stack of masters and grandmasters, and both of our diamonds instantly locked in DPS when I'm the only grandmaster on our team. And I'm sitting there like, why do you have to be the asshole that instant locks DPS? It doesn't matter if, diamond is just an icon or whatever. Like, I've proven to myself and to the game and to SR to be up that high because I can be able to play DPS at a level that necessarily you can't. So don't be that asshole that locks in DPS. Fill for your team. Don't be a C word.
That's a general, I think, tip or a general advice is that I think when you do have somebody that's really good, generally having to play.
The thing is, we won that game too, but I filled for the team as Zenyatta, and I even got to play the game as Zenyatta because I'm just good at throwing my balls at people. But just, it's such a dick move, you know? But the thing is, people don't get punished for not carrying. People who play whatever, like I had a guy yesterday. Oh God, this asshole.
This is just rant
DPS.
Session here.
No. He picks one hero. I can't remember the hero. I think it was like Soldier or something or Genji. And he's like a Zarya main. Like every season, Zarya, most played hero. And he said in game, I don't care what you say to me. Like this is when we were struggling. We asked him to switch. I'm not switching off DPS. I'm not switching this hero. I'm only playing this guy. And that guy will never get punished. And it will cause you to lose the game. And it will cause you to be pissed off until I don't know what the point of this. But
this is the grind you're talking about. That's exactly.
You can only be so nice and fill for so long before you get people like this that just completely throw you on tilt, and then you do it, and then you start playing DPS only, and then you tilt more people. Yep. It's an endless cycle.
It is a cycle. It does happen. You just have to, you know, not give in to it. So hopefully the population, or you don't start a cycle of doing it.
Better. It's a good therapy session.
Also, one last thing I'll say about it is that maybe it encourages, like, if you didn't penalize people, maybe it encourages people to communicate better just because they know they're going, you know, they might be going in as a little bit of an underdog because there's, you know, a threesome or a foursome that they're playing against. So it's just, there's multiple ways to look at it. I just hate that it discourages me from playing with friends. Okay, guys. Well, I think that's it for all the questions. If you guys are interested in writing this in next week so we can read them out on the show, go ahead and email those to theoverview@chainmanb.tv, and we will do that. But now it's time to wrap up. It's been a good week of just going over everything. We thought it was going to be an hour show. Of course, it goes over by 15-20 minutes because we always have a crap load to talk about. But Jason, want to do some shout-outs?
Shout out to you two for being my therapist every week and letting me rant and rage. Shout out to my parents always every week. Shout out to ESL for letting me do what I do. Shout out to Blizzard for making Overwatch. I'm just gonna end it there. I'm not gonna be mean to fish sticks this time.
Wow, so nice of you. Ben, your turn to be mean to him. Take your opportunity.
I can't. I'm not a mean person. Shout out to no shout outs this time. I got a plug. I'm commentating something.
Yay.
So this is, it's going to be a more minor event, but this Saturday on my channel, twitch.tv/fishsticks, I'm going to be commentating, I think alongside Ask Joshy, but I need to clarify that with him. I'm going to be commentating the Meltdown City Clash.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys don't know what Meltdown is, it's a esports bar brand. What's the word for it?
It's a franchise.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, franchise. Yeah. So they have, I'm actually looking at the map now. They have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They have like 20 to 25 bars. Almost all of them are in Western Europe. There's three in North America. But they're located all across Western Europe, and they are esports bars. So they actually have this event where they had teams play at the bars themselves to qualify for a finals, which is going to take place within the Meltdown ecosystem. So the grand finals is it's going to be, oh man, I had it 2 seconds ago and then I closed it on accident. But it's going to be Budapest from Hungary. The Budapest Meltdown Bar versus, I can't remember the name of the city, Grum. So it's a French city with Gros something. Anyway, I'll figure that out. So I'm not expecting like the craziest, highest level games ever, but Grenoble. There you go. That's the name of the city in France. So Grenoble versus Budapest. I'm not expecting the best highest level games ever, but hopefully it should be fun and getting an opportunity to cast because I never do anymore. So it's going to be on my channel. Shout out to Meltdown for allowing this to happen. And you can follow me on Twitter for more of my shenanigans. I've been streaming a bit lately. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitch and Twitter at Fishsticks.
Yeah, those kind of events are awesome. I mean, just, kind of blending more, casual gathering type of thing, like Meltdown itself is like an esport gathering, franchise and place. And not only that, you can drink and have a good time, but kind of combining all those things are really, really cool. Just adding tournaments and where you can represent each other, represent a city and things like that. That's really great.
I just wish someone would open a Meltdown in SF.
I can't believe there's not one.
You can get a license to open a bar in any city. And they help you like get started with marketing and all that. So
yeah. I'm surprised Twitch doesn't have something and it's just live stream 24/7 from like a camera in the corner.
We talked about it.
Really?
You can, yeah. Well, like Kevin,
you can do a Shia LaBeouf
Kevin loves
thing.
The idea of like getting a brick and mortar store at one point, but
whoa, yeah. Brick and mortar store. Okay. That could be interesting.
Like a bar.
Yeah.
A brick and mortar bar. Okay. That's what I meant to say.
I was going
to
say, you're going to sell Twitch merch. That's all you're going to do there. No. God. Okay. No. That would be kind of cool if you could do that and then just rotate a bunch of different games in there and stuff. It'd be cool. I'll round these out thanking the two of you guys, of course, for doing the show this week. It's always a great time, as always, and everybody for watching. You can always find the VODs for the show on youtube.com/ChamManV, including this one, which I'll be posting in an hour or two. You can, again, find the show on a bunch of audio channels, iTunes, Google Podcasts, as well as SoundCloud, just by going and searching for The Overview. You'll pretty much find it instantly if you do that. And follow the show's Twitter account at TheOverviewGG. That's where you usually post, like, at least the first announcement. I always end up posting it just on my normal one, which is ChamManV, but as we're leading up to the show. But the big announcement normally is there, so you can follow that there. But that's going to be it, guys, for The Overview this week. So for Jason Kaplan, Fishsticks, and myself, ChamManV, we'll see you next week. Later.
Peace.